This is John Moeller, and we invited Mark Reichert, the president of the Open Geospatial Consortium, to come here and talk about the OGC reference model and how there may be some relation of that to the idea of a reference model for spatial ontologies. Mark has been the president of the OGC for several years now. He formerly was with the National Imagery and Mapping Agency and its predecessor, worked with the vice president's office for the National Partnership for Reinventing Government in the United States and with the FGDC and a whole variety of different geospatial activities. So, Mark, go ahead.
Thank you, John. I appreciate the introduction. And good morning to everyone and good afternoon for you in other time zones, perhaps evening. What I'd like to do is, as John mentioned, give you an overview of the OGC reference model and hopefully open up a little bit of discussion about how this concept might be applied or extended to SOCOP activity. The ORM, as we call it, it can't live without an acronym, so it's the OGC reference model, or ORM, is available on our website. If you go under standards, click on that page and go to the OGC reference model, you'll get the entire document. You can statically print it, or you can use it as HTML. But its design is to provide an overview of OGC standards baseline. As OGC has migrated since its beginning in 1994, of course, you can imagine the standards framework has grown and grown. The ORM is a way for us to build a cogent story where we can discuss what that baseline does, how it operates, how it exists in different views. So it really allows you to get some insight into what OGC has done, to a certain extent what we're doing, and really apply those standards to some concepts of architecture. Can you all on the phone and WebEx are you able to see these slides okay?
Yes.
Thank you. So what we've done with the ORM is basically to organize it very similar to ISO's reference model for open distributed processing. So it's broken down into five sections, and I'll quickly go through these, and hopefully I'll be able to reinforce what we're doing and then entertain some questions on for the SOCOP. So the first section is an enterprise view. This is where we're discussing, you know, what interoperability is about at its simplest level, provide some examples of how that's being addressed, talk about the OGC a bit in terms of its role in advancing interoperability. So obviously you're going to find a definition of interoperability. We take that from ISO, and it's also listed in the OGC abstract specification. I want to point out, too, that we deal with technical interoperability, but what drives our process are all the other issues, policy, legal frameworks, cultural differences. Those are the types of requirements that we get in our process to render a technical interoperability solution. So we're driven by user requirements. David Schell, our founder and chair, actually summed up business purpose pretty well, so I decided to put it in the briefing. And that is, he's saying what we're doing is facilitating a common picture of reality for different organizations which have different views of the same issue, the reality of the disaster, the urban planning issue. And what we're trying to do is allow them to deal with that issue collaboratively. One of the other ways to look at it is efficiency and cost and purpose. So after being in the government for 20 years and dealing with interface control documents and system design in the way we knew it back in the 70s and 80s, I have a different view of interoperability. You know you don't have it when you're dealing largely with custom integration, high system lifecycle costs, unable to rapidly mobilize new capabilities. And as previous speakers have mentioned before, you have duplication of effort despite your efforts to try to prevent that. Now, there are occasions when a lack of interoperability is a really good thing. This might be one of them. So the square peg in the round hole really fits well. This is the case where you definitely want non-interoperability to be the case. Getting back to the core of the discussion, though, interoperability as implemented by OGC, and it is an implementation level, can be exemplified by the Web Map Service, one of our first web services standards. And it's developing a common protocol that any service can understand and respond to. And it's in its simplest form, a client, whether it's on your laptop or it's a service out there, can interrogate different sources of information with the same request and receive back information that can be fused into the user or the user application be viewed as a very complex map. We also in the ORM talk about, you know, what it means to have open standards. and I've listed some of the qualities there. We also talk a bit in Section 1 about the return on investment or benefits of open standards in the ERGC. And then we have a number of discussion topics in Section 1 on what is the ERGC all about and our mission. I'm not going to go into detail on that, but because I think most of you probably know ERGC well. But we do focus a lot on where OGC fits in the standards stack. We have de jure and de facto standards. We have domain and infrastructure response to the standards community. We sort of sit in the middle, creating the kinds of software interfaces to connect those worlds. So this graphic, in a very simple form, tries to demonstrate that case that we work very closely with the infrastructure standards organizations. We work very closely with ISO. And others like the European equivalent, SEND, and its technical committee 287, to try to bridge that gap and create implementation-level standards that make sense. Also, if you go to OGC, you'll find a series of abstract specifications. In many cases, if you open the cover, those are ISO standards. We work very closely to maintain connectivity and similarity in our abstract level. Just a quick comment on alliances. We have over 30 of them now. These are point-to-point formal agreements that allow OGC to work on various collaborative issues. We're usually doing a few things, one or more a few things. We're doing joint outreach on the value of location across the standard stack. In many circumstances, we're actually providing expertise on how groups like W3C, OASIS, and others can adequately and consistently represent location. And in other cases, we're doing joint testing and validation on complex issues such as how do you bring together the architecture, engineering, and construction environment with geospatial to create urban environments. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on through these alliance partnerships, and what I'm finding is that list is continuing to grow. Finally, the first section talks about implementation in the marketplace. One view of this is to talk about how products are being implemented and using the standards, whether they're traditional, commercial, or open source, or developed by someone, an individual. Those are listed on our website. We also have a program to allow for compliance testing and certification, so the document talks about it in that context. Moving from the enterprise level, we have an information view. And you can see the subchapters here. And many of you know the basics, but it really all is all about where and when. We're talking about somewhere, some when, and we're talking about it in the context of geospatial information, spatial referencing, and all the things that are necessary to orient yourself from an information standpoint. So when you go through Section 2, you're going to see a focus on spatial referencing. One of the things to point out, you can have a discrete location, which is a geospatial-derived coordinate reference system. You can have civic locations, as was explained by Doug before, which are spatial references that would need to be dealt with further to get to an exact location, and then things like coordinate transformations. The ability to render and display spatial information is discussed in Section 2. The context of geographic features. The whole context of geometry and topology. So all of these are mentioned in Section 2, and as you would guess, at a very high narrative level for the user just to get an understanding of how OGC relates to all of these different factors. Now, in there, you'll see discussions of what is a coverage, what is a feature, and all of that is explained with references and how you can then drill down into OGC's baseline and see more detailed documents or even documents from other standards organizations like ISO. We talked quite a bit about, on the information side, about encodings. OGC is one of OGC's primary encodings is GML, and that's talked about in great detail. This is just a graphic representation of the support for GML as it provides the geographic information. And I wanted to stop a little bit on this one. There's a great deal of work now taking what many people call the elephant, the 800-page or so document called GML, and tailoring it out to meet specific community needs or specific purposes and profiles. This is just a partial list of some of the great work that's been done, both within the OGC process, but increasingly outside our consortium and the communities of interest. What I want to come back to at the end of my discussion is this area of community application schemas. I think based on Doug's discussion and John's before, there are some really right areas in here where I think we can continue to do some very practical things to highlight the value of spatial ontology semantics. SensorWeb. There are a lot of encodings involved in how to deal with sensors and sensor networks, and this is explained in this section. Observations and measurements is becoming a very dominant way of creating a structure for observables. And then there's a whole series of encodings dealing with sensors, as explained here. And again, the document doesn't try to go down and give you ultimate detail. It's just giving you a high-level reference with pointers into the OGC baseline to get more information on one or more of these areas. But together, these encodings and languages help you to get from the sensor to the application or the end user in a standards-based fashion. And they'll be used and coupled with specific services that have been developed by OGC that are discussed in the next chapter. Can't leave this without talking about metadata. You'll see a discussion in there about metadata. And some supporting services. One is security. OGC has been doing a lot of work with other standards groups on security protocols and security measures. A standard that OGC just recently released, I guess it's about a year old now, a year and a half, is GeoXACML, which is actually based on an OASIS XML encoding for access, but it has been enriched with a geospatial referencing capability, and that is now an OGC standard. The other area I think is really interesting and appropriate is rights management. How do you deal with, in a web services environment, issues of licensing and related factors? So you'll see a discussion on rights management as well. The third section is on geospatial services, and this is where you'll get an overview of the services architecture, discussion of OGC web services and how that's defined, and the different service classes that OGC has produced since its inception. You can't start that without a set of definitions, and the document will go fairly comprehensively into definitions of what we mean by services, interfaces, and operations. And I would point out, too, there is variations. You'll hear a discussion in the OGC reference model about coarse versus fine-grained. This has reference to whether or not the standards were built for the web or network environment or for the platform environment. So you'll see some of our standards in the early days were, I guess we would call, tightly coupled, and most of the web service standards be looked at as loosely coupled. So there's the OGC Web Services collection of interface standards. This is just a partial list. There's examples. I believe the Web Feature Service is shown as one of the examples. So obviously, a web map service will render you a picture, which is fairly dumb. You get raster image, and you get a picture that's geospatially correct on the right data. You can view it and interpret it, but you really can't go and interrogate the features in that because it's just an image. But feature service provides features and attributes between services and clients. So now you can actually share the raw information and process it further to make a decision. There is a discussion about how to combine these in architectural views. And there's also a discussion, a comprehensive discussion on the service side of sensor web enablement, this ability to discover task, access sensors and the information they provide, and then move that through the web chain down to other applications or ultimately to an end-user decision. And that'll be a discussion of a number of different standards, including the sensor observation service, the sensor planning service, the sensor alert service, and catalogs. Be able to register and find sensors and then interrogate them to give you the information you're looking for. Other standards that are involved are standards such as the web processing service, which I'll talk about in a minute. But again, all of this is at a high level, presented to you in sort of an architectural form so you can get a context of the power of the standards with the ability to link through, to drill down to deeper information on each of these. So that leads me to the processing services, workflow, and service chaining environment. And this is where it really gets fun. Now you're able to, using workflow management tools or service orchestration, take all of these little independent services that are resident out there on the web, and assuming you have the authority to use them, be able to combine them and process out what to a user looks like a coherent process sitting on their laptop or their portable device, but it's actually invoking services around the world, perhaps. In addition to that framework that I showed you, one of the standards that's getting a lot of traction now is called the Web Processing Service. Think of it as an envelope. So you have a sensor or multiple sensors, You have a decision to make, but none of those sensors are really intelligible unless you process them independently and together to produce some sort of an algorithmic result. The web processing service is a way to encapsulate small to huge algorithms to do that processing anywhere in the service chain. It's an open standard envelope for processing, and it's getting a lot of traction in the geospatial world as well as in the broader IT world right now. Another facet of what OGC is doing, we're not creating the standards, but we're demonstrating the ability to apply orchestration, such as VPEL or Workflow Management Coalition, I think it's called Workflow XML, and other capabilities to be able to orchestrate services so they produce a meaningful, transparent result. This is just one example where in a wildfire context, we have a UAV flying over an area of active fires out west. That UAV is sending raw imagery down to a service. On the left, it's a web coverage service. Now, this is like a web feature service, but every pixel, you can get attributes. So if that imagery is multispectral, you can request a piece of that imagery, and you'll get all the pixels and all the values for each pixel, so you can process it. So let's go through a scenario. UAV is flying over a wildfire, downloading imagery to a web coverage service. This is an OGC standard-based service. A user requests information on the latest position of the fire. Well, a request goes to that server for multispectral, but that information is raw. You can't really deal with it exactly the way the analyst wants it. So it goes to another service called a web coordinate transformation service, where it's taken off its local coordinate system and placed on WGS84. Then it's passed off to an image classification service. Now, this could be a web processing service that has an image classifier in it. It's taking that multispectral now, and it's looking for a specific signature for heat. And it's rendering that image now with a specific indicator for fire. And then the orchestration takes it to the user, who combines that with other base information for reference and can understand in minutes from when that UAV provided the imagery as to where that fire is and be able to inform fire officials. So this was an actual demonstration that we did live in one of our previous test beds in conjunction with various government and industry members. So the whole concept of service chaining is discussed in the ORM and is, again, able for you to be able to go out and look at other references and drill down further. We also talked quite a bit about mass market, consumer services, and how standards are affecting that and how we are affected by that market and the standards activity. So you'll see references in there to Google Earth and Maps, KML, which you may be familiar with as an OGC standard now. But you'll also see all other discussion on things like GeoRSS, GeoJSON, and others like Open Location Services. And this is just a summary of our OpenLS standards. How many of you in the room are aware of OpenLS? Okay, basically it is a, think of it as a geo-mobility server out there. Any device that you have that's location-aware, whether it's GPS or network-derived, coders can use this standard to develop essentially an application once and allow it to apply to different devices and different networks to do things like navigation, discovery, presentation, those types of things. So it's a way for OGC to be able to enable mobile devices to be part of this larger framework and provide a window into the Internet from location devices and the various walled gardens that are out there that you pay monthly fees for. So the fourth section is a viewpoint on patterns of deployment. So what you're going to see in here is a discussion on publish, find, bind, which is the concept for web services, and then examples of how that's invoked for portals and clients, different multi-tiered architecture concepts, and applications of spatial data infrastructure, as well as the geospatial web. Well, if you don't know this one, I guess we're missing the day and age, but this is the publish, find, bind discussion. Here's an example of the OGC web services architecture in terms of clients, application service tier, and processing service tiers. And as you move deeper into the document toward examples, you'll see implementations that follow this pattern, so you can get an idea of how communities are building this out. Doug will probably identify with this one. Reference architecture service distribution, where you're seeing portals and accessible services through the portal and independently. And then GEOS, which was talked about earlier this morning. GEOS is advancing through a series of pilots, a definition of architecture, And that architecture is basically, I would say, following the reference model sort of concept. There are deliverable documents coming out of these pilots that are helping to refine their view of what the architecture looks like. So here's one example, an engineering viewpoint of that GIOS architecture. Implementations, the final chapter. So we're looking at how to get toward implementations. We look at it from a vendor side or a developer side, so that's how do we test and implement and get compliance. We also look at the registrations of implementations that are out there on the market, and then networks of use. So from one viewpoint, we're looking at implementations out in the market. If you go to our website and click on implementations, you can see all the companies and individuals who have volunteered their products and services that use one or more of our standards. This is probably one of the more heavily viewed areas of our public website because this is a fairly good, it's not complete, but it's a fairly good listing of the products that implement our standards. And a subset of those are products that have been tested as compliant and have been certified by OGC as compliant. Here's an example of refinement document. This is the GIOS flood protection and response scenario done in one of our pilots. And you'll be able to follow through that, how the reference model and the standards apply to that architecture. And all of this, I think, is complementary with the global spatial data infrastructure. You know, the concept of catalog holdings, metadata records, discrete data holdings out there that are all available using open standards and accessible to the larger infrastructure. So the whole idea is to, you know, minimize the redundancy, get to the data closest to source, reduce the deployment cost, and increase the ability to mobilize new capabilities rapidly. So that's basically fundamentally the spatial data infrastructure view of what OGC does. So looking at that document and going back to John's request on, you know, what can we do? I looked at it from an OGC perspective. We have a reference model. It's about, it's 3 or 4 years old now. It's in the second revision. It's down to about, I think, 30 pages, which is fairly short for the degree of implementation that OGC has achieved. But we're going into a revision cycle, so I think it would be really timely to take a look at the work that's being done, not only within the consortium, but more importantly outside the consortium, in the community, and try to begin including some of these in the various chapters as references. And then go further than that, I think we need to keep looking at ways in which the SOCOP and OGC and other concerns can get together and do joint activities such as experiments to extend the exemplars, the practical usage of ontologies and semantic techniques, to extend the exemplars and then to reinforce that in documentation in all of our organizations. So I look at one geology as a real potential low-hanging fruit area. Doug talked a bit about that in his previous discussion. But they've essentially used the surveys around the world who have gotten together using OGC Web Map Service, Web Feature Service, and they've developed mappings, semantic mappings from their language and from their attribution of geologic information into a common vocabulary. And there's a long way they can continue to go as they apply these techniques to overcome barriers of language and attribution, differences in semantic attribution. I think that would be one great way to maybe do an experiment that would extend that and then bring these groups together to help with that process. An experiment in OGC, step back a bit, is a formal process in what we call our interoperability program of prototyping. And the members and non-members can get together and agree on a charter, agree on an objective, and actually achieve that objective, which would be to extend a standard or one or more standards. It could be to come up with a best practice on how to best use standards from the OGC and other organizations. So to produce the deliverable would be a very helpful document to take that work to the next level. Other areas I think might be really appropriate are semantic sensor network applications. There are a number of them out there now. One that I can point to rather quickly is called the hydrologic sensor web. If you look that term up, hydrologic sensor web, you'll find Esk River catchment in Tasmania. You may think that's rather remote, but the research organization in Australia has basically used OGC, W3C, and other standards to bring together the hydrologic sensor networks in a single catchment that are run by five different agencies. And they were able to do it quickly using open standards, to get that integrated data. But they didn't stop there. They're adding semantic and ontologic techniques to bring in models and tap sensors that are being used by farmers and others. They're incidental to the area, but they're able to bring those sensor data in and refine automatically or semi-automatically some of the models they're using to forecast drought, forecast floods, to forecast pollution problems. And it's a really interesting use and combination of spatial, ontologic, and semantic techniques. Same thing goes for the sensor. I think all these things combined, hydrologic, there's some meteorological work that we're doing, that might also apply. So I would just suggest that maybe there's some real low-hanging fruit that we can go after to not only do some collaborative work, but then to document it in our reference model as exemplars. The last thing I would like to say is that we're deeply engaged at a very practical level of implementation standards development. So anything we can do to identify and socialize new semantic and ontological topics into the OGC would be greatly appreciated. I don't think right now, if you, and Doug and others, leaves, I don't think right now in the consortium you'll see a heavy emphasis on semantic ontologies. Some. I think you'll see the bulk of that in the community. But it would be really interesting to see if the members would appreciate an opportunity to focus and tackle a problem, maybe similar to some of the problems that Doug discussed or John before. John's examples are really interesting. We're getting together in December at our next meeting with on open floor plans with about three other standards organizations. And I know that John's work would fit right into that, indoor location, indoor navigation, indoor referencing, spatial reasoning, not necessarily in a geo concept, but in a local reference concept. And I think it would be really great perhaps to look at that summit in December as a potential point of discussion for next steps. And so with that, I just hope that this was a useful discussion. Again, the OGC reference model is available on our website. I recommend that you take a look at it and provide feedback. If you don't like it, let us know. If you see something that needs to be fixed, let us know. It's meant to be a community document. And with that, I'll...